for the Environment and Climate Action, has said he believes the Irish people are up for the changes that will result from the newly proposed carbon budgets. Eamon Ryan said that different sectors will have different abilities to make change, and that the largest change will probably be in the energy sector, because it's the sector that is full of opportunity. Under a plan drawn up by the Climate Advisory Council, carbon emissions would have to be reduced by overall an average of 4.8% per year between now and 2025, and by 8% annually for the remainder of the decade. So where and how will those reductions be achieved? Well, Dr. Hannah Daly is a lecturer in energy systems at UCC. She led a team of modellers that helped the Climate Change Advisory Council in the preparation of the carbon budgets. And she's on the line now. A very good afternoon to Dr. Daly, and thanks for taking our call.
Thank you.
So a series of areas have been identified for contributing to this very ambitious reduction in carbon emissions between now and 2030, in electricity and transport, in land use, agriculture, buildings and industry. But is Eamon Ryan correct when he says really the heavy lifting here will be done by the energy sector?
Well, it's certain that there are many opportunities to decarbonise the energy sector. And while I don't speak for the council, we did do extensive energy systems modelling to look at different feasible pathways for the energy system. And the good news is that carbon budgets are certainly feasible, but we have a very, very narrow path to achieving that. And if there's under delivery in some of the big sectors, especially agriculture, which accounts for 34% of our emissions, then it puts decarbonisation from the energy sector in a much, much more difficult place, and it requires much more radical actions across all the different sectors.
And in electricity, the key here are developing solar, wind, even though there are still questions about the reliability, particularly of wind as a source of energy. We all know there are days when the wind doesn't blow.
Absolutely. And electricity, while it's only worth about 14% of our greenhouse gas emissions, it's really the cornerstone of decarbonising the rest of the energy system, for decarbonising transport and buildings. And the big challenge for electricity will be to decarbonise up to 70-80%, while at the same time producing far more electricity for our daily needs, for data centres and for EVs and heat pumps that we need to decarbonise to go away from fossil fuels. So the key thing there will be for the offshore wind industry and for solar photovoltaics to take off as quickly as possible, because without those things, it'll be very, very hard to decarbonise the electricity sector. And there's a risk that even emissions from natural gas and even coal will put the carbon budgets at risk.
I suppose that dovetails then with transport. There's a big emphasis on moving towards electric vehicles. But again, there are a lot of questions in people's minds about the feasibility of that, the costs involved, the infrastructure to be able to charge your electric vehicle, if that's what we'll be driving in the future, and whether they'll have the kind of range that allows us to make the journeys that we're used to making today.
Absolutely. And transport is worth nearly 20% of our greenhouse gas emissions. So all effort needs to be on this. And we have to remember that the target of 1 million electric vehicles, which was from the 2019 action plan, the new target will require full implementation of that plus more. So the modelling that we did shows that while, EVs, biofuels, efficiency are very, very important and crucial to meeting the decarbonisation targets, we need to go further. So even while delivering full EVs, we also need to look at demand, and the number of kilometres that we drive every year is growing and growing and growing, and that is putting huge pressure on transport emissions. So what we need to do is to focus EVs on those hard to shift parts of transport, that is rural transport. And EVs now can have huge range. You can drive from Malin to Mizenhead on one charge of an EV now, and it's all about putting the infrastructure in place. But what we need to do is to make our towns and cities far more kind of people friendly and less car friendly. So we need to move cars outside of towns and cities, because a lot of transport emissions still come from very short trips, bringing kids to school and so on, because our streets simply aren't friendly. We don't have the public transport, we don't have school buses and so on. So that the additional effort to meet these carbon budgets will really be on transport demand shift.
There's been a lot of focus on agriculture, but another aspect of this is land use, which I suppose arises in the context of our agricultural industry. That grassland, you would say is a big source of emissions. Forestry is very small, so how we use the land in the future will be crucial, will it?
Exactly. And I think as we move to net zero in 2050, we have to have a big think about how we use our land. Because if you take agriculture and land use together, they're worth more than 40% of our greenhouse gas emissions. And that's projected to keep rising unless we plant far more forestry, reduce the dairy herd, and re-wet organic soils. So you have to remember that if, according to industrial projections, the number of dairy cows is projected to rise, and the methane emissions per dairy cow is also projected to rise. That causes a very, very potent greenhouse gas, which has an outsized effect on warming. So we're really contributing an awful lot to global warming with this industry. And you talked about opportunities in the energy sector. There's also huge opportunities with these carbon budgets for the agriculture sector to become part of the green transition. So that's to create biofuels, to create carbon sinks in forestry and soils, and also to create space for nature, because as we also know, we're in a biodiversity emergency, and we need to make sure that we're preserving our national parks and growing forestry as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'll come to the dairy in just a moment, but I mean, do we need a lot more forestation?
We're not even meeting lower levels of planting targets of 8,000 hectares a year. We're falling far short of that, and we'll need to ramp up afforestation very, very, very significantly to more than 20,000 hectares per year to meet the 2030 and the climate neutral target by 2050. That's research led by David Stiles in UL. We also need to re-wet a lot of organic soils which have been drained to make them more productive. That's to turn these very, very, very valuable stores of carbon have been turned into a sink when we drain organic soils, and we need to reverse that by re-wetting organic soil. So that's we need to really dedicate a lot more of our grassland, which is now used for agriculture production, into being carbons. To being a carbon store.
And just finally, we're not a very heavily industrialised country. So is there an issue around industry, about that sector, about the emissions that it's creating, and the challenges it will face?
Yeah, industry accounts for about 12% of our greenhouse gases, not one of the biggest sources, but still significant enough that it needs big attention. One of the largest sources of emissions in industry is from cement production, because CO2 is a byproduct of cement production. So what's needed there is a combination of technological innovation so that we make cement in a much more low carbon way, but also material substitution. So that means using as little cement as possible, that is substituting it, for example, for wood in building, focusing on restoring derelict houses instead of building new houses, for example. That really ties in with our housing crisis as well.
All right. Well, we'll find out in due course how all of this translates into terms of the particular targets that are set for each of these areas. We still don't know what the government is going to determine in that regard, but we will find out, as I say, in time, and perhaps we'll be able to talk to you again at that stage. Dr. Hannah Daly from UCC, thanks very much indeed for joining us here on the News at One.